So we're doing a new sermon series here at Restoration Today. And if you are new, sermon series are things that we do over a few weeks where we talk more and more deeply about a topic, about a conversation. And we're doing a series we're calling Dream for the next 3 weeks. Restoration's in this time where we've been dreaming. And what I realized this week when I was thinking about the sermon, we've been dreaming since the beginning. Right, since we started before 2014, this was a dream. Y'all, we had no clue if this thing was going to work or not. We had no clue when we came over into this land called Reston if we were going to be able to connect with our community and get to know people, but we dreamt of that from the very beginning. We dreamt of changing the lives of children in the community. We dreamt of connecting with this school. We dreamt of getting to know our neighbors. I want to share how some of those dreams have come alive. Right? In 3 years, we have packaged over 3,000 meals for kids in this school. That's a big deal, y'all. We've packaged over 3,000 meals. Through Poor Theology, we have met over 600 people who want to have deep conversations about faith in a more comfortable setting. In our Easter festival, we had over 500 people here this year from our community that we connected with and got to know. At our Trunk or Treat, we had the principal here with a car, with the assistant principal, and other teachers and other people from the community, and over 300 children come through because they wanted what Restoration was bringing in the midst of their parking lot. Time to connect with the children in the community. We started with a conversation with people, and 80 people said that they would come and do this thing with us, and we have now 300 different people a month who are coming to Restoration. Y'all, it was all a dream. Let's see what might happen. And that dream has started to come to life. So 3 years in, we're starting to dream again. What's next? Because if we stop right now, shame on us. If we stop dreaming, shame on us. So we're dreaming, God, what are you calling us to next? How do we respond? And on our third birthday, we celebrated with a three-ring circus. If you weren't here, go look at the pictures. They're all over the place. I mean, our worship team was dressed like clowns. It was something, I'm telling you. But at the end of the service, people wrote their dreams down on pieces of paper. And they brought their dreams forward. Many of you were here, and there was this tent up here, this circus tent, and you threw your dreams in there, and you thought, hey, we're just kind of getting rid of them, right? And I took them home and read every single one of them. And I prayed over your dreams. And then I sat with other people and talked to them about your dreams. And then we created this team that looked at your dreams, and we said, all right, what do we do with this now? And that's where this whole dream campaign came from, this dream concept that we're going to talk about over the next 3 weeks. How can we dream together? How can we make even more impact on this school, on this community? And what we realized was it wasn't going to take just dreaming. We had to, as my dad said, put some legs on those prayers, right? We had to not only dream, but we had to put our finances there too. And say, how are we going to respond to what God is calling us to? We knew that it would take funding outside of our normal operating budget to do that. So I want to speak for a minute. What I didn't realize was there are many people who do not understand the difference in a normal operating budget and in a capital campaign. So I want to talk to you just briefly about that this morning. A normal operating budget is the stuff that it takes to keep us going every week. Things like renting the school, paying salaries, serving our community, doing events out in the community. All of that's in an annual budget, things that we're going to do every year. And you all give so generously to our annual budget. I want to tell you that most church plants, which is what we are, like a church you just start, don't succeed for one reason. You know what that reason is? It's finances. Most don't succeed because of finances. Most don't last it past. Don't last past year three. Many do not get financially stable until years 8 to 10. Friends, in year one, you financially covered all of our costs. Y'all, that is not something just to sit here about. You should be excited about that. Come on. Year one, you covered all of the financial costs to keep this going. You did that in year two, and you did that in year three because of your generous giving. So the difference in that generous operational budget and a capital campaign, we do capital so that we can talk about what are we going to do beyond the budget? What are we going to do beyond what keeps us going, beyond the connections and the relationships that we already have? And it's not a one-year thing, it's a three-year thing for us. How are we going to take this and take this dream out over the next 3 years? Now, I want you to see, because I put this on paperback a while ago, but I want you to see how our operating budget annually is allocated. So there's a graph here that I want to show you. As you can see, worship is about 56%. That's our main gathering that we do here. The reason that is so big is because that includes our rent in the school, right? That includes salaries. That includes everything that goes to putting worship together. But you'll see grow is our area of discipleship, which is our area of focusing on our children, on our life groups, connections. That's a very small portion for us, right? We're real cheap when it comes to hanging out with each other. And the biggest portion there on the bottom you see is the way that we do serve and connect with our community. Friends, for most churches, that percentage down there is at about 8%, 8 to 10%. Over 30% of your giving is going directly back out into the community. The reason that we can do that is because we don't have a building. We rent a very, very cheap school. So we're able to do that and to go out and serve the kids in this community, those who are homeless in this community, those who have needs in this community, and connect with the people who live directly around us. I wanted to show you this graph because I think it's important for you to see our operating. As I said, the difference in capital and operating is that capital goes beyond. So we said we want to dream. How are we going to dream beyond our normal operating budget? What is God calling us to do, and how are we to respond? You will see on your seats you have a devotional guide. This is a guide that's going to walk you through the next 3 weeks. It has a daily devotion you can do. It's pretty simple. My family and I are going to do this. It will probably take you about 10 minutes. But it tells you in here each day what we're going to be talking about for that week. So this week we're talking about investing in Restoration's future. Next week we'll talk about children in our community. And the next week we'll talk about evangelism and how we're going to connect with others who are out in the community. But each day takes you through that. I want to encourage you to walk through this each day. As I said, we're going to take it and we're going to have conversations in our family. I think it is important in the church for us to talk about money. If that makes you uncomfortable, you are normal. Right? That many, many people in the world are very uncomfortable talking about money. But here's what I find. I find that most challenges that happen in marriages are around money. I find that many of the reasons people come and talk to me are about money. Many of the places that people have found themselves have to do with money. And money can be one of those really joyful, exciting things, right? You get money and you go, I can't wait to do X. I can't wait to do Y. I'm so excited about it. But I will tell you that more often than not, when people come to me to talk about money in their lives, when they say, Tim, I'd like to set up an appointment, it is because something tragic has happened. Some great anxiety in their life around finances. Some terrible, terrible thing has happened. They say something like, we're paying 26% interest on our credit cards because they've gotten too high. They say something like, I can't afford my rent. I can't figure out where my food is coming from next week. Y'all, these are real conversations I have had in the last month with people in our church and in our community. There are other people who come and say, hey, I'm really excited about this gift I've been able to give, and I'm blessing others. But I will be really honest with you and say, generally, when people come to me to talk about finances, it's because of some challenge that's going on in their life. Some difficult decision that they've had to make that has led to something that's been really, really hard. And what I want to say is, I don't think this is a new reality. I think this has been happening since the beginning of time. That finances have been something that have challenged people, that wealth has challenged people. Jesus, do you know, talks about money almost as much as anything else in the Bible. Why would he do that? Jesus was not about, bring me a lot of money. You know why he did that? People struggled with money. People struggled with the way people were taking advantage of them with money. People were hungry and they were thirsty. They didn't have places to live because of money. Jesus knew that this was a big problem for people. So I want to take you this morning to Matthew chapter 6. And I want to look at what Jesus says about money. He says this, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now I want to tell you, anybody who reads this passage and tells you that Jesus is saying don't save for your future is wrong. So if you hear that in this passage, if it's read and somebody says, it's about give all your money away, don't save for your children, don't save for your future life, I think that's an absolute wrong interpretation of this scripture. I think that is absolutely wrong. That takes this scripture and tries to use it in a punitive way. Jesus is talking about investments here, actually. You notice the word he uses is treasure. He's talking about the way that you use your treasure. And the way that we find this out is not by looking at these short verses. It's by going back a little bit. This whole passage, Jesus is telling them, don't do things in public for everyone to see. He's saying, hey, when you pray, don't go out there and say, oh God, look at me. I'm so great, because you're only doing that for other people to see. He says, when you fast, right? Fasting is when you're deciding not to eat so that you can pray. He says, don't go around to people and say, oh, it's such a rough day. I'm so hungry because I'm fasting for the Lord. Right? Jesus says, don't do these things in public. So when he's getting to this idea of storing up your treasures in heaven, he's saying, don't do stuff so that others will be excited and proud for you because of your stuff. Don't do it in a way that makes others go, oh, you're so cool. Because then he says, if you do that, the moths are going to destroy it. They're going to come in and devour it. Moths, friends, ruin things like clothes and rugs. They eat stuff. And then he goes on to rust. And what I love about the rust analogy is, you know, rust doesn't happen overnight. Rust happens over time. And when we buy those fancy things and we let them rust over time, what at the end of the day do we have to say for it? That's what Jesus is saying. It will be eaten up over time. Jesus is saying that if we allow it to, trying to spend our money in a way that impresses others over time will be destroyed and there will be nothing to see for it. He uses this idea of treasure and he talks about the heart. And he says treasure is what captures our heart. Right? Whatever we treasure, whatever we put all of our value in, that's what takes away our heart. A few months ago, I was giving a sermon and Rebecca Renner was here and she was talking about advertising. Some of you might remember that. And she said, advertisers try to get into your mind. They try to go after your heart and capture your heart. So when you watch the video of the cute little kid that's out pressing the buttons on the car, do you know why there's a cute little kid in that video? Because cute kids sell cars, right? They want you to go buy the car. And advertisers know that. They know how to get to the treasure of your heart. They know how to get that. In fact, I am not against puppies. I want to name that. I like our dog. But there is a commercial that has been out for some time about dogs, and I want to show you just a brief moment of it. Let's watch this now. I can't handle much more. All right, so listen, it's not bad to take care of animals. It's a really good thing. If you leave here today and your only thing is Tim doesn't like animals, I love our dog, okay? It's not bad. But do you think they chose that song for a reason? Because that song is going to pull at your heartstrings. It is going to take your treasure and you're going to spend it in that way. Again, I'm not saying that's a bad way to spend your treasure. I'm trying to say that's what treasure does. Where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And then he goes on to talk about the eye. And I think this is really interesting. I want to read this to you. It says in verse 22 and 23, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body, if your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? This week, Susan and I and took the kids and we did a wedding in the Outer Banks. And it was really great. It was sunny. It was like 78 degrees. It was perfect beach weather. We got a couple hours each day on the beach and we would go out. And literally, there were moments where the sun was so bright. I know, we haven't seen that much here lately, but the sun was so bright that we would like cover our eyes, right? Sunglasses or something covering our eyes. And it was so potent, the sunlight, as it came into our bodies, that we would cover our eyes. Then there was the last night we were there. Our daughter Sarah really likes going to look for sand crabs on the beach. I don't know if you've ever done this. It's a really cool thing. You take a flashlight out and they're everywhere. I didn't know this happened. But we had to walk down a pretty long path to get to the beach. And I don't know if you've ever seen a kid with a flashlight, but having them keep it in one place just isn't real, right? I mean, I was walking with Nathan and he's doing this. I'm like, how am I going to see the ground, right? Up, down, up, down. But as we walked, the space just got darker and darker and darker. And there was a moment where Jackson was walking with Susan and he screamed really loudly and he jumped and it was a pine cone, right? I mean, something on the ground. Because in the darkness, things are scary. And as it gets darker and darker, just like the light was so potent coming into our eyes, the darkness as it comes in is equally as potent. And it does fill the whole self. The darkness can fill the whole self. And that's what Jesus is getting to here. He connects this to our finances, to our money. He says, watch out for greed. Jesus is encouraging us that greed blocks our eyes from allowing light in. It blocks us from seeing the things that we can do to connect with the world and to serve the world. And then the passage ends with this. It says, no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And again, I want to say something very clearly. It does not say, Jesus does not say money is bad. Money can't control you. That's what Jesus is saying. Don't let your money control you, because if it does, you can't serve God as well. If it takes over you, you can't do both. I think when it comes to our finances, there are two things that people really want. One is freedom. I think people really want financial freedom. We want to manage our financial affairs in such a way that things are not tight all the time. Does that resonate with you? You want to manage your finances in a way that you can save, that you can do things that you want. You want to have a little fun, and that you can give and help others. You want to make sure that there is food on your table and shelter over your head. Those are important things, because those things lead to financial freedom. Y'all, I think to get to financial freedom, it actually takes work. It takes diligence. It takes decision making. It takes saying no. And it takes saying yes. Very, very important pieces. And here's the second thing. I think when it comes to our finances, we are natural people who desire legacy. We desire something to go on. Many people, as I talk to them, as they get older, they're thinking about the legacy that they're leaving their children or their grandchildren. Maybe the legacy that they're leaving the Humane Society, right? The legacy that they're leaving, because a lot of our life is built around leaving this legacy. You may have heard of this thing before that people called the dash, right? The moments between your birth and your death, and what you're going to do in those moments so that after your death, there's this legacy that's left. And I think we're people that want and desire legacy. I remember the last time I was in my grandparents' home that they lived in for 60 years. And I stood in there and it was about to close. And my parents were selling the home. And I thought about all of the moments in that home. All of the things that they had done. The dinner parties that my grandparents had thrown for us. My grandmother who watched me when I was a kid. For the important moments that she poured into my life. And my grandfather who brought such joy all the time. And how my grandparents gave as much as they could to whoever they could. Because legacy was so important to them. Y'all, Restoration wants to be about legacy. 100 years from now, we want to be this church that started in an elementary school called Forest Edge Elementary. And so many people's lives have been affected. And so many people have connected. So we're talking about our legacy. In the front of that book that you have that I want to encourage you to take, it talks about what has come out of these conversations as far as our legacy goes for the future. And this morning, I'm going to tell you about some of the little pieces that we're talking about investing in Restoration's future. We're going to talk much more deeply the next 2 weeks, but I want to tell you briefly about four things that we're trying to do in this capital campaign for the future of Restoration. You might notice that there's a trailer out there and there's a truck that pulls it. That trailer was on its last leg yesterday, that truck. And we know that we need that truck to get things here on Sunday morning so that we can connect with people in our community. So one of our goals is to replace that truck. Some people say, where's your church? I say, our church is in the school, it is the people, and it's the truck that pulls the stuff there. So we're going to replace that. This projector that you see up here, this projector that we have is 12 years old, and it is dying. And it's important that people can see things that we do on Sunday morning, so we're going to replace that. We're going to work on our kids' area and replace our signage in that room and some of our decorations so that people can feel more comfortable leaving their kids in that space. And then, you will see, we're trying to get a video camera for worship so that we can video when folks aren't able to be here. And some people have said, yeah, but doesn't that push away from community? And here's what I want to say. I was having a conversation with a young woman in our church a few weeks ago. And she said she went to a church when her grandmother was dying. And she said when her grandmother was dying, it was a gift when she could lay in bed with her grandmother and worship with her through the video live stream system. So we want to offer gifts to our community for people who want to experience worship and want to connect even without coming in the door. So those are some of the beginning initiatives, the beginning things that we want to do. And as I said, I'm briefly mentioning those not because they're not important, but because we're going to get to some of the meat in the next couple of weeks about big things that are going on. I want to encourage you to start to pray about this. Do the devotional. What is God calling you to do? And let me be very clear. If God is calling you to do zero, that's okay. But I want to encourage you to respond. I went to some leaders in our church the last few weeks, and I asked them to give ahead, to say, hey, our goal is $200,000. Can you give and can you commit to what you're giving? And our leaders in this church, and it was less than 20 of them, have already given $157,500 of our $200,000 goal. So we are super, super close, but we want everybody to participate. We hope that everyone will get connected to the future of this. Susan and I, in our lives, we think this is really important. Leaving a legacy, paying attention to our finances. We tithe to this church. We give 10% of our income to this church, and we're also giving to the capital campaign because that's important to us. We have three kids that hopefully will go to college someday. Maybe. We're banking on at least two of them, right? That's what we're budgeting for. And we want to retire someday. That'll be really good. But we want to leave a legacy. And we believe so deeply in this church and what God is doing here that we want to leave a legacy here. So I want to invite you into a period of time. I know for some of you, this is your first Sunday. And if you're like, really? This guy's talking about finances on the first Sunday? Yes. Right? I'm glad you're here. We don't do this every Sunday. But we do feel that it's important to bless others with our giving. It matters. And Jesus thought it was so important that he talked about it over and over and over again. Money is one of those things that has the ability to bring us such financial joy and freedom. And yet so often it brings us burden. I pray that we would be allowed and open to have the light enter us so deeply that we can go out into the world to share that light. Amen.